But
we still gonna see.
We still gonna see where the vocals are, Tay.
Yeah, man, I feel it. I'm ready for it.
You know, we just gotta roll with it. See where we at.
No doubt.
I'm not saying I'm gonna change the world. I do guarantee that I will spark a brain that will change the world. Welcome to the Mookie Mel Show.
Welcome everyone, welcome to the Mookie Mel Show, brought to you by yours truly, Mookie Mel. I'm greatly honored by your presence, so for those of you who are new, welcome. For those of you returning, thank you again for your time. We have a phenomenal episode lined up, per usual. I have a great topic in mental wealth. I have my friend, Tay-Tay. Deontay.
Yeah.
Holy moly, donut shop himself. Yeah, got my boy here. We're going to dive into mental wealth a little deeper with Tay, but I'm very excited to speak on this topic of mental health, better known as mental wealth. It's a topic that's honestly very, very under-discussed. And I think it's relative in all senses of the word. One, to bring a little light to it. Two, to show relativity to people listening who may be going through similar experiences and just don't know how to speak on it. So we're going to do that today here at the Mookie Mel Show. We're going to speak on mental wealth in sports, scholars, and social. And just further dive in how the topic can relate to the three S's. But that's enough for me. Tay.
What's up?
Go ahead and introduce yourself to the people, man.
Yo, what's up, world? It's your boy, Deontay Pittman, coming from Columbia, South Carolina. 13-year Army vet. Here kicking it with my boy, Moot, San Antonio, Texas. Just killing the game right now. Hope y'all enjoy this show, man. It's going to be real interesting.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Well, you heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen, from your boy, Deontay, and your boy, Mookie Mel. Let's jump right into S1 in sports and mental wealth. So, Tay, let's jump right into it, man. I know you have a little bit of knowledge of football, but tell the people a little bit about some of your sports experiences, some of your sports history.
All right, man. Well, you know, growing up there in the Carolinas, you know, we love ball. Ball is life, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, I played rec ball, AAU ball, you know, high school ball. I mean, hey, we even just balled in the summer just because.
Nice. Tay, didn't you play a little semi-pro or something of the nature you were telling me?
I played semi-pro football in Watertown, New York when I was stationed up there.
Okay, nice. How was that?
It was amazing.
What was your favorite part?
We got to go play in Canada. Montreal, very beautiful up there. They're talking French. It's kind of cool. I didn't understand what they were saying, but just to hear it and then see how the signs and stuff are different, it was real legit. So it was a trip I always look forward to going to.
Yeah, I hear that. Traveling is definitely always a dope experience. Okay, so let's run with that. In playing semi-pro or even, you know, as you were saying, you played football all growing up, similar to myself, you know, we were out doing anything. I never played organized football a day in my life, but I played with my friends in the field, you know. But growing up and just kind of into your semi-pro career, what was your mental approach in terms of sports?
Well, I mean, basically, like, I think a lot of people turn to sports as an outlet. Stuff that they got going on in life. And that was my whole thing. Growing up, my parents split when I was 7. So that's when I started diving into basketball and football, like, for real, because I had so many emotions on the inside, I didn't know how to let them out. So I had to find a way to do it and, like, to keep my mind off stuff. You feel me?
Yeah, I hear that. So as in keeping busy, is that kind of what made you want to stick with it? Or, you know, because obviously you had some talent playing semi-pro, and obviously, to some extent, you know, it might have been God-given, but you had to work at it for something, right? Or
yeah, I mean,
what was your story?
I love. I mean, when I started to do it, it was just something to get, you know, get out. But then I just grew a love for the game, you know, the competitive edge. I mean, come on, man. People start running off at the mouth. Only thing you got to do is lace them up real quick. Hey, they down on the ground. And then you can be like, hey, you got something to say now? Because you done laid them out. Or, you know, if you done darted off an 80-yard touchdown on them, they can't really say nothing after that. You feel me?
Right. I feel it. So, Tay, in terms of sports, what do you think that did for your mental growth or understanding of yourself?
Well, it helped me realize that I was stronger than what I thought I was. Because, you know, a lot of people think, hey, I get out here and play basketball or football, I just got to have talent, you know. But you got to have the brains to do that, too. You got to approach the game in a way of, it's almost like playing chess. You got to make sure that you're making better moves than your opponent is. Because, you know, at the end of it, everybody wants to win. So it's all about execution. So you got to have a good game plan going into any game, whether it's basketball or football, what you want to try to do, what you want to achieve out there, and then by any means necessary, go get it.
Yeah, I hear that. And you bring a valid point in execution, and that's relative to anything. So I think that's a great point. And also, you know, in terms of what you're saying, having smarts for a game plan, it's also, you know, intelligent to be able to adjust with the game plan. So when you get a curveball, you need to, hey, this one's sinking bottom left corner, you know, so that's life too. You gotta roll with the punches, you often hear. But okay, I hear that, my brother. Man, so a lot of, as of late, right, a lot of these NBA players have been talking about their mental health and their mental status, specifically speaking on Kevin Love and DeMar DeRozan. What are some of your thoughts on them openly speaking to the public about this?
I think it takes a lot of courage. I commend them for doing it because, you know, as men, we always got our pride. You know what I'm saying? We always look to be strong, especially like relationships or marriages. You know, you're supposed to be the foundation holding it down. So, like, a lot of people don't feel like saying, hey, I got this situation because they don't want to be frowned upon or looked upon as being weak or just wimping out. So, I mean, I'm glad that they are being open and foretelling about it because it says a lot about their character.
Yeah. No, I 100% agree. And I think there's beauty in the struggle, especially in this specific situation. But I think it's beautiful, too, because these are two very different individuals from two very different backgrounds. They're both from California. Kevin Love is from Santa Monica, California, which is a pretty well-known area, pretty prestigious, a good amount of money, not too far from Brentwood, California, where the famous OJ case happened. Now, on the other end, DeMar DeRozan is also from California, but he is from Compton, which is a very different socioeconomical environment, stability from Santa Monica, California. And not to mention, for those of you who don't know, DeMar DeRozan is black and Kevin Love's white. So I think it's powerful that both these individuals are, as you said, you know, as men, brave enough to put themselves on that platform. But okay, man, I appreciate that. No, I just wanted to get your insight. You know, I'm a basketball guy. I know you're a football guy, but we're going to talk basketball on my show. Gotcha. But let's keep it rolling, man. Let's jump into S2 and scholars and mental wealth. So, Tay, it's funny. You and I were just talking about school and everything's relative, you know. And, we brought it to the mental wealth. And I kind of mentioned, you know, school can bring different factors into anyone's life. School can bring joy. School can bring positivity. School can bring, you know, excitement. On the other end of the spectrum, school can bring a lot of anxiety, a lot of stress, a lot of fear. You know, school is just a plethora of emotions, especially when dealing with young people, you know, or older people, or people our age. You know, it's school, even in college, people can be stressed from their work or whatever else is going on in their life. So as you know, as anything. But let's specifically talk about in our youth, you know, kind of what was your approach going into your typical school day in high school?
Let's see. Well, I mean, basically, like, you got to understand in our society, a lot of black men, you know, weren't graduating from high school, let alone college. Someone was dropping out to sell drugs and everything like that. I felt like school was a gateway for me to be able to achieve and do great things for my life. You know, so I wanted to, my whole thing was, I didn't like math, but in every subject, I was going to give it all I had. I felt like if I slacked off in school, it was going to make me become a failure. And by any means necessary, I couldn't fail. Especially having a son, like my junior year of high school, I felt like once that happened, everything that I did reflected him. So I couldn't mess up. I couldn't fail. Like, failing was not even an option because I had some little eyes looking up to me that needed me to be everything to lead them and be great. So I approached it like, hey, I need this to get out of there. So I got to put forth all the effort. I need to be great in every subject. So that way, at the end of it, when them 4 years are up, whether it's college or high school, I'm walking to play with that diploma so I can go out there and make myself better in the world.
Right. Right, and what, Deontay, you didn't tell the people, but where are you from?
Columbia, South Carolina.
Okay, smooth. So it's interesting because my perspective is so different. I'm from Plano, Texas, with, you know, a suburb in Dallas. And it was always just an ideal, like, school. I was going to graduate from high school regardless. It was almost like a guarantee. And as I got older and society kind of showed me who I am or what I'm perceived to be, my dad once pulled me over and asked, well, how do black kids think it's cool to be dumb? And that's kind of when I realized I need to apply myself. And it wasn't as instant as that. It took a few years, but, you know, it took a little while. Your boy had to get it together. I got popped in the head and I was like, hey. But, you know, at that moment, that's kind of when I had an epiphany of, okay, you know, maybe I am expected to play dumb. So it's funny how you relate to being motivated. And I almost thought it was a guarantee. And, man, my approach at times was almost too lackadaisical. In school, it didn't as much bring me stress. It just kind of annoyed me. I more or less had a problem with authority as a youth, you know. Right. So that's kind of some of the pressure I felt going into school. Okay, so since you were right pursuing and achieving, which, man, I commend you for, and especially having a child by your junior year and still staying in school, man, that's tough.
Yeah,
that's double. Sure. What were, you know, other than being self-motivated, whom were some of your favorite teachers? And what subject did they teach?
Miss Graham teach English. Man, she was about as cool as they come. Uh-huh. You know, she'll joke and play, you know, with you to a degree. But when it came down to those assignments or it came down to making sure that you enunciated when you said stuff, right, writing your vocabulary, she didn't play. And, you know, and she said it was always so key, as you said before, like your dad said, when is it okay or why is it okay for black people to be dumb? Mm. You know, a lot of times when people see young black men, they think we always going to talk in that street slang. And they think that we don't have a brain up there because we just so corrupted by the streets. But honestly, you know, when you go out there and you look apart and talk apart, you know, people look at you in a different light, like, man, like, what in the world did he or she go through to get there? Because, yeah, we all look down upon. We're not expected to be in corporate America or do great things out there. Like, so when we breaking the barriers and we got lawyers and doctors out there killing the game and stuff, or even having a black president, stuff like that, they're like, man, they really did that?
Right.
I mean, so it just speaks volume, you know?
No, I'm with you, and I hear you. But let's digress. In terms of this English teacher, how did she make you feel? Because it sounds like she kind of motivated you, but she was strict, or, you know, kind of had a specific guideline. So how did she make you feel? Because, you know, people always remember how you made them feel, not necessarily what you did.
She challenged me because a lot of times, like, you know, it's easy to talk in slang. You know, especially being young, that's what you want to do. But, you know, she pulled me aside one day and she was like, listen, I can be here to be a supporter for you. I can be somebody to give you advice, but I'm still your teacher. And my goal is to make sure that every student that comes through here, and they passing because they're not going to have a lack of knowledge. So I guess she challenged me, you know, kind of at first it kind of pissed me off too a little bit because I was like, man, like, why you being so hard? Like, you know, we got a all right relationship. But she was like that with everybody. But, you know, it took me later on in life to really realize what she was trying to say. But she already done lived that life. You know, she was like in her 40s and I'm here a teenager. So a teenager, we're not thinking about 20 years down the head. We just thinking about right now. So, you know what I'm saying? Just being so strict and being so hard just made me understand, okay, listen, she's being hard for a reason and she's not going to back down. So, it's either I'm going to have to shape up or ship out. And like I said, failure ain't the option.
Yeah, I hear you. So, sounds like, you know, as her pushing you in the right direction and being able to connect with you, also having your son. I dig it. So, let's jump into S3 in social.
Yeah,
and boy. Mental health and mental wealth. All right, Tex. So you initially started the show saying you've been in the Army for what, 13 years?
Yeah, 13. I did 13 years.
Okay, okay. Well, thank you for your service. Greatly appreciated, my brother. But tell us a little bit about some of your Army experience, man, and how that kind of played out and relatively with mental well.
Okay. Well, you know, basically a lot of people already know once you join any branch of the service, you know, there's a possibility you're going to deploy, you know. Most time, it doesn't necessarily mean you got to go to a war zone. You can go to Germany or Korea, places like that. I had the liberty to go to both. Different culture, but it's real nice over there. I mean, you'll get to see the world in a different light, to see their customs and values over there. Definitely, you go to Afghanistan, it's pretty much like the movies that you see, Black Hawk Down or Act of Valor, stuff like that. And it can really change your perspective on life, the way you look at things, the way that you look at, oh, I can wake up and I can turn on SportsCenter in the morning, or I can run up the street and go to McDonald's or IHOP or whatever. Can you not doing that over there? You know, and you're eating MREs, which is meals ready to eat, little stuff packed in a bag, and you got a little warmer in there, you can eat that. But you don't have that regular luxury of doing the fine things like we get to do every day in America. You feel me?
Mm-hmm. I hear that. And experience itself, we were talking about this earlier, experience itself, you know, no matter what you tell me, I'll never truly understand what it's like to be deployed to, you know, this country or that country or at this time or that time. So, again, I appreciate you sharing. But, man, so what did being placed in all these different branches or locations in the Army kind of teach you about yourself?
Well, I guess it helped me think outside the box. You know, if the only thing you know is being stateside, you know, you can't really appreciate what you got, or you're not open to other cultures or customs. I mean, the stuff they eat in some of these places, I didn't eat and would never eat, you know, because that's just ain't what I'm about. But, you know, it helped me realize that, you know, I can adapt and overcome to anything I face in life. It also made me just really value how rich we are in America with, you know, the things that we do have that other countries don't. I mean, like, for instance, in Afghanistan, some of them people over there live in nice, real nice places, but some of them stay in, like, in type of mud huts, you know, and they use the little river water to bathe and wash clothes in. You know, they ain't got a washer and dryer, you know? Stuff like that. They got the kids out there cleaning in it.
First world problems is different. So what all countries have you been to?
I've been to Korea. I've been to Kyrgyzstan. I've been to Germany. I've been to Afghanistan.
Okay. Nice, nice. About how long in each?
Roughly about a year, anywhere between a year to 15 months.
Okay. So how do some of those experiences in some of those different countries affect you today?
Korea, Germany, Kyrgyzstan, they didn't phase me or nothing like that. Afghanistan was where stuff really got crazy. If I got a little time, I can elaborate, you know? Okay.
Speak, my brother.
All right, so, like, for me, when I went to Afghanistan, I was a mechanic by trade in the military. But when I got over there, I was on this thing called STT, which is a security transit team. So, basically, I had colonels, full-bird colonels, that we would ride on convoys with all over to take them to meetings and stuff like that. So, like, we're in full battle rattle. For those you don't know, it means a Kevlar, which is the bulletproof helmet. And then we have on the LVE or the flat vest, you know, the protective vest. You got plates in there, and these plates probably weigh total about 35 to 40 pounds. And you walking around with this on, and you got on your boots and your full long pants and like a little mesh shirt that still has the Army fatigue on the sleeves. But it's 140 degrees over there, you know, and 140 degrees during the day. And so, and you walking, like, most of the FOBs, which is a forward operating base or a base, it's just got dirt and gravel there. So you walking on that all day, dust kicking all over the place, and then you got all that on. So it makes you lose a lot of weight. It makes you not want to eat because it's so hot. You just want to drink water or Gatorade and maybe eat some fruit. You know, that's just rough because you're not really in no AC. You just in these big trucks all day, hours on time on the road, and it just wears you out. You feel me?
So you elaborated on some of your experiences in terms of physically, how it made you react, but where has some of these experiences left you now mentally, Tay?
Well, I think I told you when I first started working with you, I suffer from PTSD. And, you know, that comes from the trauma that I've seen of, you know, seeing trucks blowing up, dead bodies, being in shootouts and not knowing if we were going to make it out. Mentally, man, since you don't have time to react, it lingers on and it tears at you in your mind and in your whole mental psyche, man. It just tears you apart, like, real bad. So from seeing all that stuff and then coming back stateside, man, it took a toll on me. You know, PTSD is a mental disorder that pretty much it makes you want to isolate yourself from everybody. It makes you want to think the worst case scenario. So it's pretty much like a battle inside your head where I'm trying to tell myself positive things, but the PTSD is making me feel or think negative things. You feel me? Mm-hmm. Like, I go counseling like every Monday and I'm getting a lot better. But when I first found out I had it, I was on 8 different medications and it was driving me crazy to the point I tried to commit suicide one time. Cause I was in a real bad, dark place. I felt like nobody wanted me. Nobody cared about me. Nobody understood what I felt because they was like, oh, we all go through stuff in life. You just got to pick it up and move it on. But if you're dealing with a breakup and you don't have any type of trauma, it hurts. You got to have time to heal. But if you are dealing with a breakup, you got PTSD, you feel like I'm messed up. Don't nobody want me. I'm damaged goods. What good can I be for anybody? It makes you feel like you are beneath the dirt that's here. And it makes you feel like people throw you away like you garbage. And that plays on you. You know, coming from being big on family, you know, I got missing for 3 days when nobody can contact me. I turned my phone off because I just felt like who would want to be around me when I'm not nothing, when I feel the way I feel, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that joint is, thank God I'm in a better place than what I am now. I don't know want to be in that place, man, but it's rough. And I still suffer now. I suffer from depression, anxiety. If I'm in a big room crowded full of people, if I can't see the exit, I freak out.
And you know what, Tay? I want to stop you there for a moment, bro, just because I have been out with you. And you are one of my dear friends here.
Appreciate it.
And you do not suffer, bro. You are overcoming.
Appreciate it,
and, you know, I speak that over you, and I see that with you. So, you know, man, again, it's phenomenal in the point that you're sharing your story. You know, many people don't even understand the day in the life.
Right.
You know, yet alone just the struggles of being a black male than having extra baggage.
Right.
You know, and people can't see where your mental is.
Exactly.
You know, so, no, you're overcoming, bro. And, again, I appreciate you sharing your story. You know, that this is overcoming in itself right here.
Yeah, right.
You know, so, I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about. Were you suffering from what? An ankle injury? Boy, I must have hit you on the court.
Stupid. <boy.
laughs> Oh, man. But okay. I dig it. So, you don't mind me asking then, Tay, what is the biggest factor for you then on a day-to-day basis?
Pretty much staying grounded spiritually, man. I got scriptures or devotions that my cousin sends me from time to time to help me stay focused. Let me know that, you know, God got me. I am love, you know, and I got friends like you that I can call and talk to. I mean, we ain't been kicked out to eat at Sutherland's in a while, but I know that's soon to come.
Shout out Sutherland's.
Yeah, shout out Sutherland's. I mean, we both been kind of busy, man, but I mean, from a standpoint, like I told you, man, you're like a little brother to me, and I love you, you know, with everything you give me. And, you know, I mean, this friendship, we knew a long time ago it was going to be something that was lifelong. So, I mean, having good people like you around me or mentors at church to pray for me and keep me lifted up helps me stay in a place where I can overcome this and not let it defeat me. You feel me?
Yeah, I hear you. Well, again, I love you too, my brother, for sure. But, man, that comes from you, again, overcoming, because you more or less extended yourself to me when I first met you.
Right.
So, you know, you're powerful in yourself, my man.
Appreciate
you're powerful
it.
In yourself. But okay, I hear that also. So, man, one final question, honestly, for you, Tay. In terms of your perspective and your past history, what you've been through, mm-hmm. in terms of what you can relate to people in terms of their current life experiences and where you are today. What would be your biggest advice that you could share with anyone struggling with mental wealth issues?
Hey, man, listen up, everybody. Mental disorder, that's a disease, man, but there's a cure for it. If you're suffering from something, go get help. there's a thing called 22 a day, meaning 22 veterans kill themselves a day suicide because they don't get enough help or they don't go get help. You got resources out there, man. Like, if you take your life, you're really being selfish because you're not seeing the damage you're going to do to people that truly do love you. You know, you can't come back once you're gone. So if you're suffering from something, go get help. Seek that attention, man. It's worth it. Because, I mean, like Mal said, I'm overcoming. I can't see what Mal see, but I thank God for him being a brother and giving me that encouragement word because sometimes I feel like I can't go on. So first step is to know you got that problem. Go get help, man, and keep God first in all that you do. He'll definitely sustain you. He may not feel like he's there, but he's always there. He'll never leave you. So this word of wise, man. Go get that help if you're suffering.
Tay, I appreciate it, man. I appreciate your powerful words. I appreciate your powerful testimonies, and I appreciate you as a friend. Well, thanks for coming on the show, man. Another phenomenal episode. Jigga Man.
Yo.
Holy moly.
JJ.
Yeah. Woo!
Go ahead with the facts, man.
Man, it's going to be hard for me to follow that episode just because it was so dang good. But I'm going to make this as brief as possible just so I can take away nothing from that awesome episode. Let me start out with this. Tay, thank you so much for your service. You seem like a really awesome dude, and I'm sure anyone would love to have the pleasure of meeting you. S1, S2, S3, I mean, every single one of them were powerful. So, Miles, good on you, too. We had a brief hiatus last week. It was unexpected. It was due to technical issues, and I'm very sorry that we had to leave y'all without an episode for last week. But we are back with the vengeance, and we will be releasing episodes all the way through Season 3. So, please keep coming back. Sorry about that. Beyond that, like I said, I'm going to keep this brief. See you guys next week. Have a safe weekend. Have fun. And like Tay said, if you're struggling, don't be afraid to reach out. Because a lot more people love you than you think. So with that, I'm out. Jay out. Mookie Mel Show, out.